This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Good evening and welcome to the Classical Network and WWFM's weekly series celebrating our musical future, where we bring you performances from the stages of the top university music schools and conservatories. I'm your host, David Ozenberg, and this week we are very happy to feature Princeton University and the offerings of the Princeton University Glee Club. And as he has been for all of the programs as we presented from the Glee Club, with me is the Director of Choral Activities and Senior Lecturer in Music at Princeton University, Gabriel Crouch. Good to see you, sir.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, we have presented this annual concert before. This is the Walter L. Nolner Memorial Concert. But I wonder if you, just for our listeners, would remind them who he was and why this concert is an important part of the Princeton University musical year.
Walter Nolner was one of my illustrious predecessors, and it certainly in terms of years served and many things else besides, he's my predecessor who's made the really, really deep footprint in the choral department at Princeton University. And when Walter passed away, a very large number of his alums clubbed together to form an endowment. This endowment, it had hundreds and hundreds of contributors, a lot of small gifts, but a lot of small gifts amounting to something quite considerable in the end. And it actually allows us to completely fund a choral orchestral performance each year with a professional orchestra, which is wonderful.
The concert this year, well, I should say this way, why don't you give the choral breakdown of the opportunities for students at the university, because this will feature the Glee Club. In past concerts, I remember you've had some other singing ensembles as well.
Well, yes, that's right. I mean, it's a funny thing at Princeton. You know, this is a town which is famous for a lot of its choral institutions, and you wouldn't necessarily say that the university is considered to be a hive of singing. But actually, if you walk around the campus, especially if you walk around late at night, you'll find that the campus is overrun with students who love to sing. And we now have, you know, just in my department alone, we have the Glee Club and the Chamber Choir. We have a vocal concert program and a choir called the William Trigo Singers, named after another one of my illustrious predecessors. Yeah. So that's four just in the music department. And then on top of that, of course, we also have the wonderful Chapel Choir, which is another huge choir, something like 14 a cappella groups, a student-run chamber choir, two student early music collectives. The campus is actually overrun with singing and singers. It's quite difficult to control sometimes.
And though you will be modest about this, since you have come on at Princeton, and what year is this for you here at Princeton?
I've done 8 years now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It has exploded and gone to incredible heights with Gabriel at the helm. The concert we're going to present today was given back in Richardson Auditorium in March. It will feature, well, loosely, it will feature two works by English composers, in quotes. One is an English composer whose inspiration comes from virtually nothing English, yes. And another is a composer who, of course, created most of what we know in England, but born in Germany, and he will find his inspiration on this program in Italy. But we begin with an even more exotic source of inspiration for a choral work, and this comes from a student and chorister in the Glee Club.
That's right. Shruti Rajasekhar, she's class of 2018, so we've just recently said aside goodbye to her. She's now in London. She's a Marshall Scholar studying at the School of Oriental and Asian Studies. But Shruti is both an incredibly gifted singer of Carnatic music, and she comes from actually a wonderful dynasty of Carnatic musicians. But she's also steeped in a kind of Western choral tradition as well. And as a young composer, her music is a fascinating fusion of those two cultures, which are both very, very important to her. And this is not a composer from one tradition superimposing something else. This really is two sides of one person coming together in musical form, because Mashruti, she comes from Minnesota. That's where her family now lives. And so she's steeped in that kind of Lutheran choral tradition of Minnesota, yeah, as she is in the Carnatic music of her family. That's what makes this music so fascinating, because we really did feel in learning this piece like we were studying the craft of Carnatic singing, but the music in front of us was laid out and taught to us as if it were a piece of Western choral music.
Carnatic music, just by definition, is music from Southern India.
Yeah, South Indian classical music, that's right.
Right, which does differ quite drastically as the different regions, but if anybody knows her Indian music, and I'm not saying I'm an expert in this at all. But
well, no, and certainly neither am I. And the more time I spend with Shruti, and in fact we have several other musicians who are expert in musics of South Asia, the more time I spend, the more I realize that I know nothing and could never know anything either. But of course, you know, just to boil down a complex picture into something absurdly simple, there's no harmony, really.
Right.
And the harmony that forms the bedrock of most Western choral music, it doesn't really exist in Carnatic music, and the successful fusion of those two musical forms must require a very thoughtful handling of that issue, the issue of harmony.
Text-wise of this piece, so we should probably give the name of the piece and then the text, because you're also coming into a language which must have been a challenge for
Yes, Guigba. Well, the piece is called Ganam, and it's a Sanskrit word, really means singing, and Shruti's created a sort of celebration of the singing art, and in a way I think the implication is that, you know, the voice is the voice. This is the human voice, and it can be used to express itself, to express joy or faith or sadness in any number of different ways and according to any number of different traditions. But basically it is the same thing, this same powerful force that we all have inside of us that we can all celebrate.
The work is in movements which kind of have the voice meet this Carnatic tradition. If I'm getting this right, it kind of come together, one takes over the other.
Yes, yeah,
it's interesting way to lay out the piece.
Yes, you could say that it starts in a relatively loose form, but basically Shruti sort of introduces a Carnatic raga, Kalyani, which is definable really by what a Western musician might think of as its mode. It's sort of similar to the Lydian mode, and you hear sort of fragments of this melody gradually being assembled through solo voices, and then later chorused voices sort of come in on top of these and start to do more to bind these fragments of melodies together. And then in the third movement, Tanam, we start to feel this rhythmic pulse, and you know, this element of rhythm and rhythmic complexity starts to kind of underpin the entire thing. The sound gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then we turn away into a slightly more kind of reflective and reverential end. But yes, the piece is largely in four movements. We also feature three undergraduate student soloists as well, and these were soloists, you know, they had to be taught from stage one, and how do you make these melodies sound, for lack of a better word, authentic.
Right.
It was a fascinating process to witness, and I hope it comes across on tape as well, because I loved the performance of it. Anyway, the three soloists are Sarah Baber, the soprano, Calvin Wendling, the tenor, and Eli Berman, bass.
So to begin this concert given by the Princeton University Glee Club, the annual Walter L. Nolner Memorial Concert, a work by then Princeton University student and chorister in the Glee Club, Shruti Rajasekhar, her Ganam, Gabriel Crouch, my co-host, leading the Princeton University Glee Club. on tonight, celebrating our musical future, we're shining the spotlight on our closest participant in this unique weekly program, Princeton University. And once again, the Princeton University Glee Club. I'm David Ozenberg, and my co-host is the director of the Glee Club and the director of choral activities at Princeton University, Gabriel Crouch. And we're listening to a concert given last March, the annual Walter L. Nolner Memorial Concert. And this began with a work by then, she has graduated, Princeton University student, Shruti Rajasekhar, her Ganam, which means singing in Sanskrit. And a work performed here with soloists Sarah Baber, Calvin Wendling, and Eli Berman. The next work on the program, as I said at the top, an English composer, we lost him fairly recently, just a couple years ago, John Taverner. And John Taverner's, well, I guess he kind of had the old epiphany, or the, and actually this work will cover the kind of thing that one thinks biblically that Saul, who changed into Paul, went through. And he discovered a Greek Orthodox faith, which then permeated almost all he did musically for the rest of his life once he discovered this. And he was very devout about it and poured it into his music. And his music then became something of a witness to this, of various ecstatic states even of this faith. The work, Gabriel, we're going to hear, Total Eclipse, basically is that.
Yes, that's right.
And it's a fascinating work.
It's a dramatic account, and it's staged as well.
Yeah.
At least the musicians are positioned in a way that creates its own drama of the conversion of Saul.
Right.
Exactly. This was, in fact, the United States premiere of the piece. It wasn't particularly recently written. 1999 was the date of composition. Mm. But there are lots and lots of logistical reasons why it might have taken nearly 20 years for the piece to receive its American premiere. One of those reasons is this vast battery of timpani that you need in order to make the piece work. Really, you need a minimum of 17. But also within
so
the
you
score...
You scoured Central Jersey for every timpani available.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. But, I mean, actually, you know, we have a really wonderful percussion tradition at Princeton and lots of students who are more than willing to bang a drum and do so with great skill. It was a wonderful opportunity for us to get some other undergraduates involved in our work. The other thing that's in the score that's a bit mind-bending is the Baroque String Orchestra. So if you think about it, you know, it's a 40-minute work. You want to program it. You know you need to hire a Baroque string orchestra and the largest battery of timpani that has ever been assembled. You know, what on earth do you perform with it?
Right.
And I think that for a lot of performing arts series and institutions, that would be an almost insurmountable problem. Mm-hmm. But it's actually the sort of thing that at a university you can do without worrying too much, because all we have to do is kind of, you know, is wheel out old and new sets of timpani and find some students who want to play them, and we're blessed with lots of those. And then with the Baroque orchestra, well, it's a Baroque string orchestra. Well, why not program something else that involves a Baroque string orchestra? And I will never, ever, you know, refuse an opportunity to perform Handel's Dixit Dominus. So there we go. There's our program.
There's your program. So the Taverner, as he has in a number of his pieces, there is a... It's hard to phrase, because I know he would be very particular if he were here. There is our representations of not only real people, whether it's Christ or something like that, but also these things they stand for type of thing. And this is kind of a common theme with his. And for instance, we mentioned how this piece will have to do, on the whole, with the conversion of St. Paul, who is represented in this piece by a soprano saxophone and a countertenor. It's this type of setup that Taverner loves to make happen, again, with strange instrumentation, as Gabriel just told you, spatial aspects. The piece is called Total Eclipse. It's a metanoia, which means a change of mind, a turning around, a conversion, as you will.
Yes, that's right. So the metanoia in question is obviously that of Saul to Paul. And the piece begins with this extraordinary anarchy. I certainly have never heard a piece of classical music that has quite this sort of sound of cataclysm at the beginning. It's really, really, really special and a once-in-a-lifetime experience. The soprano saxophone soloist is supposed to be playing in a completely anarchic way. The idea is that Saul is John Tappan says, off target.
Right.
So his soul and body are not in alignment. He's pre-conversion. He's mindless in that way. And I think this separation of Saul into countertenor singer and soprano saxophone, I think the idea is that the saxophone is the lost soul, the wailing soul. So when we performed this, we put the soprano saxophone out in the audience. And as you'll hear, it's a bunch of screams and wails and, you know, extraordinary sounds from the instrument, which I hope were suitably arresting for the audience. And then gradually, as this first section unfolds, there are these kind of avalanches, these tumbling avalanches of timpani as well, which we'll hear on either side of the stage. And then gradually, the soul of Saul and the words of Saul and the countertenor get closer together and join together on stage. And at this point, the narrative, albeit it's a very kind of slow-moving and simple story, but the narrative then starts to unfold from that point.
The movements take us, Saul, now changing into Paul with the conversion, has to confront Christ's crucifixion.
Well, yes. I mean, the crucifixion is the kind of backdrop for the whole piece. That's the agony which we're all expressing at the beginning. And that is what sets up the dialogue of the piece, which is the voice of Christ. So this is another part of the sort of geography of the piece. So up in the heavens, up in the gallery of Richardson Auditorium, we placed the instruments and voices representing Christ, which is a tenor soloist, a baroque oboe, a temple bowl, and a tam-tam. And then also using lighting, we created then this dialogue between the earthly Saul, the countertenor and soprano saxophone, and the heavenly Christ, which is the tenor soloist, the oboe, the tam-tam, and the temple bowl. And repeatedly, Christ assails Saul with these admonitions, "Why dost thou persecute me?" And then the soul of Saul resists at first, but then over a very long drawn-out period, the conversion is experienced. And then in this process, Saul, in becoming Paul, then moves up himself to the gallery of Richardson, where he is joined by another countertenor soloist, who represents this kind of momentary duality in Saul and Paul, and then the other countertenor soloist then departs and moves off to Christ as Paul. Some of this stagecraft was stuff that we came up with ourselves in order to make proper use of the building that we have.
Right.
Let's remember that this piece was actually conceived for performance in St. Paul's Cathedral in London, which is acoustically a very, very different space and allows one to do all sorts of things that Taverner wanted that we can't do, like hide the chorus. That's another thing that he wanted to do.
Right.
The chorus should be hidden because they should be, as he says, mindless. They should have no personality. We should not be engaging with them in any human way. They should simply be presenting this mindless commentary. And what the chorus does is pound out these words, metanoia, metanoia, which is conversion, conversion, or stavromenos, stavromenos, crucifixion, crucifixion. So the chorus provides the commentary, and then all of the drama unfolds through these characters of Saul converting to Paul and Christ up in the gallery.
And we should say, Taverner did leave the door open for when this is being performed in other places, depending on what the venue is, that you can take this freedom, this liberty to sort of make it work as you need to do, in this case, Richardson Auditorium. Now, I know this is on the radio, so you're not going to get all the theatrical and the spatial quite the same way. But that being said, just before we hear the piece, maybe just this whole arc, this sort of time compendium that Taverner asks of a listener, just sort of set our listeners into that, of this arc of the piece.
Yes. Well, it's true that listening to Taverner's music requires a particular frame of mind and a certain amount of time and a certain amount of quiet, both acoustic quiet, but also a quietness within you. Music that Taverner writes reflects the solemnity of his religious soul as well, his sense of the space, of the vastness, of the cosmos that we can't understand, and of the mysteries of faith that we can't understand. And he is constantly trying to capture that in his music. And we have to entertain that just as we would if we're listening to Bach, as, you know, placing ourselves within the position of the particular faith of Bach and the effect that that has on the architecture of his music. It's exactly the same with Taverner, but the effect is utterly different. So I would suggest to you, as someone about to listen to this music, to ready yourself for some ugly, some surprising sounds, a lot of ethereal stillness and wonderful beauty and serenity as well. But everything that occurs takes a long time to unfold, reaches a slow climax, and then decays away from that climax. And that all takes place over minutes rather than seconds. So the overall effect of this piece, it feels like one journey, not a series of journeys, but it's a long journey, something like 40 minutes.
Which is interesting because it takes its genesis from something that happened in a lightning strike, if one believes the Bible, as Saul converts to Paul. You have three character singers and then a soloist. You have a saxophonist, as we've talked about. And with all this logistics, you also have a co-conductor. So why don't you give those people their due here?
Yes, of course. The first solo voice you hear is the soprano saxophone. That's Alex Lorenzi. And Alex is the one who starts down in the audience and then travels up, and always representing the soul of Saul and then Paul. The voice of Saul is Eli Berman, who you've heard already in Garnham. The voice of Paul, the converted Saul, is Calvin Wendling, this time singing as a countertenor, not as a tenor, as you also heard in Garnham. The voice of Christ is Sergei Tugarinov. And then we also have a descant soprano soloist used to wonderful, wonderful effect above the chorus, and that's Madeline Kushan. And then the co-conductor, because it's so many musical forces dispersed around the hall and lots of musicians up in the gallery who are all behind my head and a lot of them can't see me. And all of that was taken care of by the assistant conductor of the Glee Club, who was also a student from the class of 2018, Gloria Yin.
Total Eclipse by John Tavener is performed by the Princeton University Glee Club. On tonight's Celebrating Her Musical Future, we're shining the spotlight on the Princeton University Glee Club. With me is the Director of Choral Activities, Director of the Glee Club, Gabriel Crouch. We're listening to a concert given last March in Richardson Auditorium in Alexander Hall on the campus of Princeton University, the Walter L. Nolner Memorial Concert, and we just heard John Taverner's Total Eclipse, featuring the Glee Club, as well as soloists Sergei Tugarinov, that is the voice of Christ, Eli Berman as Saul, Calvin Wendling as Paul, soprano soloist Madeline Cushion, and saxophonist Alex Lorenzi, and co-conductor helping Gabriel out in this spatial performance of Taverner's work is Gloria Yin. We'll be back in a moment with our second quote-unquote English composer, drawing his inspiration from Italy. You're listening to Celebrating Our Musical Future. This unique program is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.